America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Winning Time, Season 1, Episode 1, The Swan is over, but we are just getting started. My name is Grace. We are here on the post-show recaps feed to be chatting about Winning Time, the TV show, the new HBO show, talking about the Los Angeles Lakers. I'm very excited to be joining you. It feels like this is a bit in my wheelhouse, covering sports over on Rob as a podcast, and previously covering a Adam McKay show. On HBO Succession, that this felt like fit the Venn diagram. But I'm not alone. I am here with a very special co-host. I'm here with Jason Reed. Jason, how you doing?
Oh, Grace, hold on. Sorry, I'm just finishing up my sand dabs. I apologize.
Do you want a burger? I get you a burger.
No, these sand dabs are fantastic. I have them all the time. Yeah. I got it like that, you know.
Did we all Google sand dabs during the episode?
I did, and it still didn't seem any more scrumptious after that. Grace, I'm happy to be here with you to talk about this seemingly what's going to be a wild show.
It is going to be very wild, I think. Yeah, Winning Time, The Rise of the Lakers Dynasty, based on a book, Showtime. It looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. I thought, first impressions, Jason, what did you think overall, episode one?
Yeah, coming in, I was like, so how much of this is going to be basketball? How much is going to be comedy / drama? And so far, it's not a lot of actual basketball. It's a lot more establishing the personalities in this first episode. I'm sure we'll get more into basketball later, but I did like how we're establishing the big players in this first episode.
Yeah, I thought that they did a pretty good job at like at least teasing out who are going to be some of the main players. But really, like when I think about I was very excited to see Kareem Abdul-Jabbar being recreated in his Airplane appearance, one of my favorite movies, Airplane. Yeah. But like other than the two scenes he has, he's not really, and you think he'd be a huge personality. So I imagine they like seed that in there so that for later he's in there. But for the most part, it's mostly Quincy Isaiah as Magic Johnson, John C. Reilly as Jerry Buss, a little bit of Jason Clark as Jerry West, Gabby Hoffman as Claire Rothman, and that's really it. I guess a little bit of Norm Nixon as well in there, but yeah, I certainly thought it was a great setup. Sometimes premieres, the pilots can feel very setup-y, which this episode definitely does have that, right? Like it's all about the sale. But I thought they did a good job of balancing, yeah, letting us get to know these characters as well as setting up seemingly the plot of what this show will be about.
Yeah, look, they're seeding in a lot of the secondary players that we'll probably know throughout the season, like you said, like a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, a Genie Buss. So yeah, I'm excited to see what more they do with those characters. I really like the Kareem character. So hopefully we get a more of a starring role later in the season.
I was surprised to see Kareem Abdul-Jabbar swear at a child for real outside of a movie. Yeah. So I'm excited to see how they like portray him, because that's not, I guess I don't really, I guess the more I was like watching this, the more I realized that, yeah, I don't know a ton of like these people. I was born in 1991. So this is certainly like 10 years before I'm even born, let alone am like having functioning memories and being able to watch basketball. We're going to rely on some of the patrons who are huge Lakers fans to tell us whether this feels like supremely accurate, and Jason, you and I will talk about whether the show is just actually fun to watch.
Yes, that's what we're here for. We're not here to get into my new show. We'll let you guys help us with that. Yeah, we're gonna take you through the fun times of the show, not really get too bogged down in the big basketball of it all.
Well, they do tell an episode, the very first thing we see on the episode is this is a dramatization of events. Some of the names might be changed, I did see from our friend Josh Lemer, who I first met as Josh Go Lakers, talks about some of the personalities that we saw on the show might be a little bit different than what he has at least seen in real life. But they tell us right off the bat, it's a dramatization. It's a TV show. Don't get mad when it's not 100% accurate.
Yeah, that's par for the course with things like these, right? I mean, the actual story is probably more boring than what we're going to see. So they got to spice it up a little bit.
Yeah. All right. So we, after the title secret or the text on the screen, we get we find out that it's November 5th, 1991, in Los Angeles. I am born at this point in the show.
I'm 6 years old.
I'm like 3 months old. That's great. And we are in a hospital. And yeah, we see Magic Johnson. He's sort of sitting, looking at a magazine, sees Michael Jordan on the cover. And we see a nurse say like, he would like to leave, but he needs to head out the back because there's photographers out front. And people are sort of staring at him as he leaves, as he gets in the car. The person he's with, or the driver, is crying, much more emotional.
I was surprised. Like, you know, I was 6 when this all happened, and I was like, this guy just like breaking down, bawling next to him again. Yeah. All the stairs. I think I probably would equate it to like one of my earliest like memories of a sports figure is like when OJ got released. That's probably my earliest memory of something like this, something that kind of just has shockwaves through everywhere, not even just the sports world, but just in the world in general.
Yes.
But like I said, I was 6, so I don't really remember where I was when the announcement was made that Magic Johnson had HIV.
Yeah, this is I looked at the dates. I looked it up. The scene is set on November 5th, but it will be 2 days later that he will publicly announce that he has HIV. So, I mean, the shows love to do this, like, hey, let's flash forward into the future and get a scene. And it's certainly... unfortunately, I think perhaps, you know, as someone who would call themselves much more of a casual basketball fan, unfortunately, probably the thing that I know Magic Johnson the most for, other than perhaps, you know, actually, maybe now being the owner of the Los Angeles Dodgers, actually is like how I first remember him. But yeah, it's certainly a story that looms large over his life. And yet, so it's interesting that that's how they choose to frame the opening of this show.
A very powerful scene. And you can just kind of, the way that they kind of cut in and out of the dialogue, it really made you kind of feel in his head where he's kind of phasing everything out. And it's just like, dealing with this issue, like looking at a cover of Ebony magazine with Michael Jordan on it, like made me thinking, like, you know, I could have been this if not for this, like what he thinks at the time is probably just lethal diagnosis.
Yeah, that's true too. Yeah. So so we cut from the driver crying in the car. We get the intro. Did you like the intro?
Loved it. I loved it.
I loved it too. Yeah. I think I think intros these days can be very hit or miss. I think HBO, I think, knows how to do an intro. I think, well, they do an intro, or they do the, like, here's the title of the show for 1 second, you know, Euphoria.
It's just like jazzy music, just like over some, like, this is a theme song that had lyrics that, you know, was like, you know, it showed you a kind of milieu of the time. The song was My Favorite Mutiny by The Coop. Never heard it before. It's probably going to be in my rotation.
Yeah, it's great.
You know, so I loved it.
Yeah, it's very like evocative. It feels, you know, we start in 1991, but then flashback. We're in the, I think when the show starts, we're actually in the late 70s, but the show will take place mostly, I believe, in the 80s. It's perfect. It fits the tone so well.
Yeah, they're going 79 when the show opens, I believe.
That's right. And for a show like HBO, I feel like this will be, I'm excited. I feel like I've gotten the privilege to cover these shows that are like the weekly drop model, the Sunday night HBO shows where like, I can't even skip the intro if I wanted to, because I'm like watching live at 9 o'clock on HBO. So I'm glad that the intros on the shows that I've been covering have been good. But So we then cut to Dr. Jerry Buss. He's watching basketball, and he's talking to someone who's clearly not listening about how basketball is like sex. It's a beautiful thing. And sex and basketball are the two things that make him believe in God. So we get our first instance here of him. Whoever he's like with is like trying to sleep, ignoring him. He turns to the camera. He says, I'm going to buy a basketball team. And we get the first instance of an Adam McKay classic. He did direct this episode, which is character is going to break the fourth wall and talk to the camera.
Yeah, I was surprised that it's not just one or two main characters. Like, it seems like every character is eligible to like to break the fourth wall
at any time. Someone could turn to the camera, Jim Halpert style, and let us know what's going on. Yeah. Did you like the choice? Do you like the choice?
I'm down with the choice. I like it. It's, you know, this show really seems to shift tones a lot. It goes from drama to comedy. It's even a little cartoony. With at one point we get Jerry West as the NBA logo, and the logo comes to life.
Yes.
So I think in the shifting form of this show, I think it fits well. So you never know what to expect with this show so far.
Yeah, I agree. I think I saw some people being like, why is he doing this again? Stop doing it. He's doing, like, I think some of his movies have done, Adam McKay's movies have done this, where he has the, like, you know, the turn back and look at the camera. He loves this style. I think it's kind of fun. And I think John C. Reilly specifically, is like the person who does it the most in this episode, is like perfect for it. I have to say, like, this is, to me, the two highlights of this episode, which is great, is John C. Reilly's performance as Jerry Buss and Quincy Isaiah's performance as Magic Johnson, which, like, for sure. If you want your two leads to like pop off the screen, and if that works, it's probably both well for the show, but yeah.
Especially for Quincy Isaiah, who is like a just a brand new newcomer.
Yeah, he's
like,
totally new.
I was really impressed with his performance. So, same. At one point, Jerry Buss was supposed to be Michael Shannon.
And the other one, the other rumor is Will Ferrell, right? This is the
This little broke up Will Ferrell and Adam McKay.
The breakup heard around the world. Yeah, is Will Ferrell not being able to play Jerry Buss? Josh Wiggler today in the Post Show Recaps Discord says, "Hot take: I think Will Ferrell would have been a very good Jerry Buss, but I thought John C. Reilly, is pretty much perfect role. Michael Shannon, that would have been interesting."
Yeah, I think, and the rumor was that he had such an issue with the fourth wall breaking that he decided to walk away from the project. But yeah, John C. Reilly is great here. I feel like, I don't know if I can have Will Ferrell like going into a character like this. I feel like I see too many of Will Ferrell's past roles to really buy him as a actual person. John C. Reilly, I buy him as this person, and he does it with great ease. So I loved it.
I always give this example of Dwayne The Rock Johnson, where I say, I can never watch a movie with The Rock and not be like, that's The Rock. We covered the first movie we ever covered on Post Show Recaps Theater when Ariel and I started that podcast was Jungle Cruise. And The Rock's character's name is Frank. And I'm like, you're not Frank. You're The Rock. And I feel like Will Ferrell has a very
similar best, we'll give you Dwayne.
Yeah, I'll give you Dwayne. You could be Dwayne. You're done with The Rock. You could be Dwayne. But Will Ferrell, I think, has a very similar vibe where it's like, no, you're Will Ferrell. You're not like Jerry, you know, but like John C. Reilly, I think, has a little bit more of the like, yeah, he can blend into the role a bit.
It's
more.
Like, I don't know. Are you Jerry Buss or are you Ron Burgundy? I'm not sure. Or are you Buddy the Elf?
Buddy the Elf. Yeah. Any one of these.
Buddy the Elf, like swearing and like being around naked people. Like, I would like to see that, though.
That's a whole
That'd be interesting show. Crossover.
Yeah. So we see that Jerry is not at his house. He's actually at the Playboy Mansion. And he's talking about how he's with all these people, young people, fashionable people, people you want to have fun with. None of these people have heard of the NBA. They don't watch the NBA. But he's going to go by the Lakers. And, he says the press says the NBA has an image problem. And for most people, the image is that it's too dark. He didn't make a fortune betting on the sure thing. He made it by buying low and selling high. The NBA in the late 70s, not the hottest commodity around, potentially for reasons other than just that people don't particularly love basketball at the moment, potentially for larger societal problems, Jason.
Yeah, and it seemed like number one, it was getting quote unquote too dark, as John C. Reilly says.
Yes.
And it seems like this era of basketball coming in is a lot more showy, and it's a lot more like, you know, like vibrant, mm-hmm. and it seems like it's a little boring, maybe past its time, but I think, you know, what this show was supposed to tell us is that this team is what's going to revitalize the NBA.
They're gonna be sexy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Be cool. Flashy. Fashionable.
Fast.
Yeah. Fast. Yeah. So the sale is for $67 million, but Jerry is going to offer half of it in property. The owner of the team, Jack Cook, not a good guy. I think
not great. not great.
There are some red flags, Jason. I don't know if
it's hard to see, but if you squint, you can see them.
He needs to pay his wife, which he does not often call his wife. He has other words that he likes to refer to his wife as. And he's Claire Hoffman, Claire Rothman, sorry, who's played by Gabby Hoffman. Very confusing. comes in and she's like, I'm not who he's talking about. I am just an assistant. And we get some insight into Jack when he says, you know, maybe you can undo a couple of buttons when Jerry comes. So
do you get a good sense of what Claire Rothman's role is, like, or her official job title? I looked her up and it said she was a GM of the forum, like of the
oh, really?
Stadium. Yeah. But it seemed like she was the assistant here.
Well,
I wasn't sure.
Well, I wonder, is this a case where as she perhaps gets to work for somebody who would respect her more than one Jack Cook,
she get a promotion
she becomes a general manager, perhaps. I don't know. We'll have to, I'll have to do some digging to see who Claire Rothman was at the time. Yeah.
I did like the breaking of the fourth wall to explain to us how he doesn't have the money yet. Like, he's like, I got this. I need this. So, I don't have this. I have no way of getting this right now.
Yes. So Claire Rothman is the accountant. She's Claire, okay. Or Jack Cook's accountant, who does go on to do bigger and better things later. But yeah, I love also very minor character in this episode, but Dr. Buss's business partner, Frank, who just constantly,
I love Frank.
Like, this is a bad idea. He doesn't have the money. He doesn't have it. Yeah. Yeah. So Claire comes up, brings them some booze, puts down her hair, playing into what Jack had told them. And, even though Jerry Buss does not have all of the money for this deal, he agrees to it anyway. When he walks out, he says, here's the rundown of the money. I'm about $15 million short of the money. I need. Yeah. So some pocket change for Jerry Buss. He'll just need to scrounge up. Which
he seems like he's the kind of guy that can, that's a mover and a shaker and can get things done. So even at that point, I was like, I'm pretty confident he'll figure it out.
Yeah. So we then meet Jeannie Buss, Jerry's daughter, and she wants to work for him and work for the Lakers. And they do a mock interview and says, you know about the summer draft? The summer draft's coming up. Yeah, if you win the coin toss, you win, which I cannot believe that it's a coin toss in 1970.
Especially since it was like, I mean, I'm sure they dramatized the coin toss, but it was so amateurish. Anybody got a coin around here?
Yeah. So he says, okay, if we get the first pick, who are you going to take? It's easy. It's been the two best players in the world just played each other. Larry Bird and Irvin Johnson.
I do like how how they were describing the two guys was like Larry Bird. And it was like white. Like, and then Magic Johnson, black. Like, so yeah. even though, you know, Magic beat Larry in the national championship when they were in college, it seems like Larry is still the more desirable option. And he's already been signed.
Yeah, so I had to do a little bit of research here to figure out, because it's a little confusing, because she's like, well, there's two choices. You could take one of these two people. And then it's like, well, the Celtics already got a Larry Bird. And I'm like, what? How like, if it's the draft, how did they can't just sign him, right? We get a scene later. It's like, this is the draft. It's not free agency. So it turns out in the year before, in 1978, the Celtics did draft Larry Bird, knowing that he would go off to college to finish his last year. And so he's ineligible he's already been drafted. He's claimed by the Celtics. So in the 1979 draft, even though they kind of are the two, they're the best players still playing in college, Larry Bird had already been drafted. So this idea of like, which one do you take? It's actually a really easy answer considering what...
Yeah.
One of them has already been
not available.
One of them is not available. Jerry says Irvin Johnson, he's mesmerizing, and that's why they call him, and we cut to the Johnson household where we finally meet Magic Johnson for the first time, whose mother does not like him being called Magic.
Don't use that word in this house. You know, it's like blasphemy, I think she says it is, or something like that.
Yeah, it's blasphemous. I mean, I don't know if, you know, give your child a name and then he starts calling himself Magic. It's a cool nickname. I mean, but maybe that's just like, I have like 30, 40 years of like knowing him as Magic Johnson.
Well, we didn't name you Magic. We named you Irvin. So
yeah,
that's what you're going to go by.
Listen, if anybody's going to say that they don't have to be called what their parents called them, I will be the first to advocate. You can be called whatever you want. Sure. So they sit down to watch the draft, and then the press get together at the NBA League head office to watch the coin flip. This is where they cannot find a coin.
Just so janky. Like, they can barely get a good connection. They can't get a good connection on the phones.
This is 1979 NBA. They're not flashy. They're not big. You know, as Buss says later, they're, you know, perhaps a failing. Some would bet that this is a failing league. But Chicago picks heads, leaving L.A. with tails, and it is tails. We do also see Magic Johnson's dad listening on the radio, seemingly on one of his many jobs, listening to who won the coin flip. Yeah. Irvin Sr.,
I really liked him throughout this whole episode. I hope we get to see more of him and his sage wisdom.
Yeah, I thought the dynamic between the two of them was really fun. Lots of there's a particularly, like, I think, impactful scene later in the episode that I think is very good. Is Irvin's mom isn't even sure there's a church in L.A. But he's from Lansing, Michigan, so be a little he's excited about it being quite warm. And but his girlfriend, Cookie, thinks that perhaps it's in their best interest if they break up. And he says, what are you breaking up with me for? For what? For Michigan? And she wishes him good luck in L.A. She'll be rooting for him.
Seems like she knows the fate of a long distance relationship of a girlfriend to a highly prolific basketball star. I don't think she wants any part of that.
Yeah. And that was interesting here to have this scene of like, yeah, I guess it's all just like setting up like what he's sort of leaving and his decision. I guess it does a good job of later setting up when he's having this decision about like, am I in over my head? Yeah. You know, I could just go back. And even his dad says like, you know, you can do whatever you want. You have people who love you back home. You know, you could come.
Yeah, and it's an interesting choice throughout the episode is like, well, you know, I still have this option of just going back to college for a year, yep. And then I can still get a, you know, high paying, you know, position for another team if this isn't going to work out. So yeah, I thought that was an interesting choice to wrestle with throughout the whole episode.
Yeah, totally agree. So we finally meet Jerry West on the golf course.
Jerry West.
He does not want the team to draft Magic Johnson. He thinks this is a bad idea. He is incredibly vulgar. And there is this, this comment where, Josh Lehmer was telling us, this is not the Jerry West or the way he's been portrayed most often in media. He is, seemingly a pretty well-respected, individual. We get his history, in the NBA, a six-time NBA finalist, not a six-time
losing
winner.
All of them.
He did win, I believe. It's something that they leave out of the show. He did win a championship, but he had this like run of losing to the Celtics like a bunch of times. Yeah, and to the point where like we also see his silhouette is the logo of the league. But he's an angry person to say the least on the golf course.
Yeah, I mean, to Josh's point, in one of the scenes when we're meeting Jerry West, Bus goes, yeah, everyone knows him as the biggest gentleman in the league.
Yeah.
To those that don't know him, like,
yeah,
something that's supposed to tell us, like, yeah, not really.
He won, in 1972, he won with Wilt Chamberlain. They did win the championship, but then, yeah, he goes on this like long run of losing. So, yeah, kind of interesting to leave that out. But Wes is Magic Johnson is too tall to be a point guard. Isn't I love this
too
line.
Tall, he smiles too much. He's too nice. He's too soft.
I love Dr. Bell says, isn't that a positive? Like he's too tall. Yeah. It's like a positive in basketball.
Takes the ball longer to get to his hands.
Yeah, it's not for a ball handler. Yeah, he's too soft. So says no, we're gonna draft him. So Wes breaks his club and storms off. And besides, the Los Angeles Lakers, they already have a point guard. They don't need someone in enter stage right Norm Nixon,
who was betrayed by Devon Nixon, Norm Nixon's actual son, which is very interesting.
Oh, I did catch that it was the last name, but I didn't realize that there's relation. That's very fun.
Yep,
that's great.
His father.
That's really cool.
Yeah,
that's fun. Yeah, getting a Manny Petty
somewhere. I just couldn't figure it out. He's one of those people that's like has been in things, but you're like, I don't. He's been in a thousand things, but none of them has like a series regular.
Yeah,
it's, so I was looking him up, and I was
Terminator
like, oh,
2,
the Bodyguard. He's in as a little kid.
Oh, he must be a kid in this movie. Yeah, Fresh Prince of Bel Air, yep. Lizzie McGuire. Yeah, that's really cool that he's playing his father. That's great. But yeah, he's at the shop getting a mani pedi. All the way, like, we thought you were the mailman when you came in. Hey, I'm all for this. I'm sure that people would make fun of him at the time, but I think it's great. Some self-care for Norm Nixon. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, and then we get introduced to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who is reenacting his scene in an airplane. Tells the kid to like F off, and then also in real life tells the kid to F off. He asks for a picture together. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, he tells his wife or his girlfriend, he's like, yeah, I did what you told me to do. I tried to find my inner warmth. And the kid comes out, he's like, yeah, F off.
F off. Yeah. More big Succession energy. F off.
Yeah.
And then Norm Nixon tries to talk. He'd like to talk to him in his lunch. And this is where I'm excited. I think that the character of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, this is really all we get from episode one, but I think they like set up so much stuff here that's going to be, he's going to be such a fun character on the show. His like his locker room or wherever he's hanging out, it looks wild. Norm tries to talk to him, and Kareem also tells him, F off.
He seems like he's like trying to meditate or something with the jazz playing in his headphones. He's like, it's just Norm. This is like the best time to come bother Kareem.
Yeah,
he's
never
just F off.
When you have the headphones on, it's a sign, you know? Yeah. I feel like
it's
maybe
me time.
Yeah, maybe that's more like, you know, a modern thing. But yeah, that's give me my space if I have my headphones on.
I think it's interesting that Norm came all the way to a movie set to try and to talk to Kareem like, this is your team.
That's
like,
true. You know what's funny? I get so annoyed because I got AirBuds for the first time in my life. My brother got them for me for Christmas, and they are phenomenal, except nobody ever knows that I have headphones in, so they always try to stop it.
Not a problem back in 79. He had all these big old cans
on the sides of the head. So we get a meeting. Magic Johnson and his dad, Irvin Sr., are going to go meet Jerry and Jack. Going to have some lunch. This is the sand dabs. This line here, this is like a total, I want to say passive racism, but I guess it's not even passive when he says, Jack says you can judge thoroughbreds by their appetites.
Yeah, and then he calls him boy a little later. Boy. Like this, the show kind of this. I think it was probably going to be pervasive throughout the whole season. It's kind of like casual racism, like displayed, which is, I think was probably actually pretty accurate to the time.
So, I mean, you know, I'm here for your insight here. Like at a show like this, they do this thing where they like the, you know, we meet later in the episode, we meet, is it Don Silver? I think he eventually, he's the guy
Donald Sterling.
Yeah. Don Sterling, sorry. The eventual owner of the Los Angeles Clippers who had the tape come out about it. Like we just meet him. He, you know, whatever about him. But we have the scene with Jack and Magic here where there's like, this like the casual racism of the time. And then we also have the like tongue in cheek when Magic goes to the party and the guy's like whites only, realizing that it's like before he realizes that it's like you're supposed to wear white attire. Like how do you in the HBO show, like how do you feel like it's working? Is it like, I don't know, I'm just
intrigued. I feel like it's accurate. It's to the time. I think just like really any other time with that whole whites only scene, we're transitioning into a different time. Whereas, you know, Magic thinks he's talking about like, cause he's black, he can't come to the party.
Right.
And it's like, it's not that this time, but he's like, you know, if we were in Michigan, I would have showed you what was up with that. But yeah, I think that it's going to be accurate to the time. So it's okay that they're displaying it like this. I don't want them to really sugarcoat things. So, you know, it's great. It's good, I think.
Right. And I think also the same, it's not like, these are, I think there's often like this like thing I think that people will say, we're like, well, it's people of their time, you know, people but like the show is also, I think, could do a good job of showing that like Jack is a dickhead. Jack is such an asshole.
They're not showing our heroes being racist, so I think that's we have this obvious villain like who is going to be the racist person. We have like someone like Donald Sterling. If you know anything about Donald Sterling, you know that he, you know, villainous person. So
super
super racist. I think we're casting those people in the right roles. I think it's, if in that context, it's fine.
Like these are people who have power, like they have power because they have money, and yet there's a way to show that like that is not like, you know, there are good people who are like not racist, you know. Like,
and
you
then,
know,
and then the Donald Sterling of it all, like when they flash his name up and they say the second worst Donald from the 80s. Right. I was like, that's a good one. That's a real good one.
Yeah. So they're eating lunch, they're having their sand dabs. Magic's dad says one of his jobs is he works on the Chrysler line, and in total, like, not able to read the room, Jack's like, that's so funny, Jerry is selling me the Chrysler building.
And like in opposites of like relatability, it's like, oh yeah, I'm about to buy that building. And then, you know, Bus is going to be like, well, yeah, I used to work at the mill, so I know where you're coming from, I know what your life is like. So Bus is like reading the situation, right? And Jack's just totally clueless.
One of my three jobs is for Chrysler. Oh, I'm going to buy their whole building.
I'm going to own you, basically.
Yeah. So Magic is like picking around his food. He doesn't know what it is. It's very expensive fish. He's like, can I just have a cheeseburger? And so this is where Jack says, you know, we have not yet settled on a pick. And I says, that's great. I haven't settled on a team yet.
I love how we played hardball here with Jack.
I think
was not appreciative at all.
I think there's a great thing that this episode does in which Magic is both confident and doubting his confidence in all in the same episode, right? He's a young kid, you know, he's a college athlete kid, right? And so he has this moment where he's standing up to this guy, the richest guy he's seen in his whole life. And at the same time, later this episode, he's like really doubting his own ability. I love sort of the contradictions we get. The characters aren't one dimensional, you know?
Yeah.
So it's great. Magic's dad sort of speaks up here. He says, you know, he'll take a fair offer. It's all good. And Jack says, this is a draft. This is not free agency. Magic says, well, I can just go back to school. I'll get drafted next year and I'll sign with a different team. Another team can draft me. He says, I'll take $600K and I'd like to finish school. And Jack says, no, I'll offer you $400K. This is where he calls him boy. And Magic says, Jack can do whatever he wants with his money. Yeah. So Irvin Sr., this is later. They're back in the hotel room. Magic is eating more food, like is clearly ordered like room service.
Hey, he's a big boy. He didn't get that cheeseburger. He didn't get the cheeseburger.
That's true. Yeah, he's eating room service, watching TV, is in the robe. He's loving life. Everything is comped, I imagine, on this trip. And he says, that's more money than $400,000 is more money than I've ever seen in my life. And Magic says, we shouldn't take the first offer that's given. And Magic says, I've learned how to make them feel good. If you make them feel good, you can get whatever you want. And Irvin says he's made a lot of compromises in his life so that Irvin can keep his mind on playing basketball. And for all the work that Irvin Sr. has done, now his son is telling him something about how about life that he doesn't know about.
Yeah, so I think you see the juxtaposition of like of their two like existences. Magic has kind of learned how to like kind of charm the people that would normally look down on him, but yep. His father is telling him like, look, you know, I have had to be looked down upon so that I could make the sacrifices so that you could learn how to charm them basically with your God-given talents.
Yeah. It's really good. I love like they have these two totally, different life experiences, right? And it's really strong. I really love their relationship and the, that we're getting insight into them, as a father and son duo on the show. I hope as, even as this sort of, I imagine, becomes Magic playing basketball for the Lakers and them having success, that we still get Irvin Sr. On the show. Because it yeah. feels like it could be a thing where, like, they're in Michigan, Magic is in L.A., but I would like more of Irvin Sr. We'll have more. We'll run through the rest of Winning Time after a quick break for our sponsors. All right, so... Magic does get his burger after all. Jerry calls him up and takes him out for a burger. And I really liked this scene. I thought it, again, gives a really good character development in the pilot for, I think, both Dr. Buss and for Magic Johnson as they're enjoying a burger on the hood of the car.
It really shows Jerry kind of like in his element, kind of like, because it seems like he's a big, like, he's a good salesman.
Yeah.
Like he can convince you to do things and, you know, kind of relate to you and make you and pull you in.
He has the good sales line here. He has the line where he says, used to build missiles for the government, but I realized I'd rather build things than blow it up. That's what I want to do with the Lakers. Just need to find the right partner. And I like their relationship here when Magic is like, so like you're saying like the deal is good? And
it's like, dude, do you know how much Larry Bird got from the Celtics? Like. Yeah.
He's like, hey, I beat him in the national championship. So I think I'm like, you know, we're pretty much the same, you know, but the like cheeky grit, like the way Jerry is like, you're really going to ask me as I like take you out for a burger. You're going to ask me again for $600,000. And like the smile, like the laugh that like Magic has. It's so cute. It's great. I love this scene.
Yeah, they both know where this is coming from. Where this is going. It's like Magic knows how overreaching he's kind of being a little bit.
Yeah, it's great. It's cheeky. It's great. I love it. And then they go to a nightclub. I thought it was like, you know, let's Magic drive his car. I guess he's in college. Whatever. He can go to a nightclub.
Oh, yeah,
I guess,
he can drive.
He can drive. Yeah. They see Diana Ross and Miss December. And he's like, you know, yeah. I don't know. Like, they're stars. He's like, hey, you're a star.
Yeah, you're a star now. Get used to it.
And again, a really good, you know, call back to the beginning of the episode when Jerry has this like vision for what the future of basketball can be and what they're going to build together. They're watching the show, all these women dance. And Jerry says, I just don't understand why basketball can't feel like that. And the Magic says, it does feel like that. So, yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, I think Jerry's he knows what his vision is and he knows what he wants to see. So I think that's going to be coming into play throughout the season as he tries to build that.
Yeah. We see Jerry West is having a drink at the bar. He's like going over some stats, and he once again finds out that for sure the Los Angeles Lakers will be drafting Magic Johnson, and so he puts a little plan in motion to see if he can disrupt that plan.
Yeah, Jerry West is kind of like it's funny because he's trying to build a better team, but at the same time, Jerry Buss like wants more entertainment. Like I would call Jerry Buss kind of like what Jerry Jones is now,
right?
You know, kind of he really wants to build a spectacle.
Well, I think it's I think it's really interesting actually, because I think that like that comment that like this is not the typical like Jerry West that we've seen, the sort of like perhaps angrier, more conniving person, but there also is a lot of depth there, right? So the scene later when he's like, you know, look at what happened to me. I was on this team where like we never won. He did win, but like we for 6 years we went to the finals and we lost every time. And you know what happened? Cook kept getting to cash a check. Didn't matter. Yep. And so I do think that like there's a little bit of let's like has the right idea, even if he's a little behind the times. Actually kind of reminds me of Moneyball. If you ever watch Moneyball, where like there's these like scouts who like this is just what they know, you know, of like this is what I've been taught, this is what I know, this is how we're gonna win, this is how we build something. We already have a point guard. We don't need this like this guy who's super tough. We don't need him. And yeah. I don't know how much there is about like with Jerry West. We'll see how much there is to play with. Like it seems like a lot of the reasons why people might not want Magic Johnson on their team is race related. I don't know how much we'll get with that being a thing that like that Jerry West and Magic end up like going through, like if that's one of the reasons why he's hesitant to take Magic. But he sort of does have this, he has this idea about what it will take to build a winning team that fundamentally is different than what Jerry Buss believes can win a team. Even though this kid is flashy, it's like, it's exciting basketball and they can win. And I think it's kind of like what Jerry says, they could get both, not just winning. They can also have the spectacle.
Yeah, and from Jerry West, like I think like Jason Clark, who I really love as an actor, I think he plays the desperation of Jerry West really well. Like Jerry West is just desperate to get a championship. He couldn't get one as a player, so now he wants to get one as a coach. He just wants to hoist that trophy. And you can just feel his desperation as he's, you know, swearing up a storm.
This is one of those things. I never know whether we should be like on these shows that are like based on historical things, whether we should talk about, you know, the future of people. But I do not believe Jerry West coaches the Los Angeles Lakers for very, very long, if at all past this season. Right. I don't think
so. Listen, if people are so spoiler averse, tune out for a minute. Yeah, but fair. I do think later in the season we will get a different coach, I believe, played by Adrian Brody.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right.
So I think in real life Jerry West sticks around as like a GM.
I believe he does move into the office. Yeah.
So yeah, I think that might be a storyline in this season.
Right. I forgot about the Adrian Brody casting. So yeah, I don't think, I mean, at the end of the episode, things are not looking particularly pleasant for Jerry West.
Not great.
The future of the team. Also not pleasant is Jack's treatment of Claire again. So he yells at Claire to come to the office, and he tells her to poke his steak. This is
he wants her to poke his meat.
Poke it. And I was like, when you're like, he doesn't
really
like
poke it.
I have to admit, I watched this episode twice, but sometimes you're like, you know, I quickly will check the Twitter first. And he's like, poke it. You're like, wait, what? Like, no. Yeah. And I was like, oh, it's his steak. Okay. Yeah.
They were always trying to get you from the framing of the scene. Like at first, so he's like pointing down.
Yeah. And so he also grabs her hand quite forcefully, and he says tells her to read the paper out loud in which there's rumors that he's been treating his wife inhumanely in their divorce. He goes on this rant. He's just like, all I've done for children look up to me, and the first thing that's going to be in my obituary is going to be like treated my wife inhumanely. And this is the kind of the part I didn't. This is like probably the storyline of the episode that I didn't love the most. I think it does a good job. I think it's setting up Claire's struggle and why she is, you know, what she could see as her future industry and what she's dealing with as a woman in the 70s and 80s. But this thing where he's just like, well, maybe I could find another way to pay my wife. He does not call call her his wife, calls her another term. Yeah. Because, you know, the deal with the Lakers could fall through. Like, what's the point of this? Like, why does he want to screw?
I don't really understand. Like, he seems like he wants to sabotage the deal. But either way, he's going to have to give his wife money. And yeah, at the end of the day, if he sells a team, he'll still have more money than he would if he didn't sell the team.
Yeah, this is the only,
like, maybe a move out of spite. I don't know.
I guess they want the scene later with Jerry to, like, be the mastermind. So
kind of the showdown.
Yeah. So Jerry finds says in the paper, he's reading this to Jerry West. He says, yeah, that's weird. It says a source within the Lakers organization front office has said we're drafting Monkeef. We're not drafting Magic Johnson. And says, well, doesn't really matter who told them, if it wasn't you, Jerry, but we're not drafting Monkeef. We're going to draft Magic Johnson. And says, even if it's a mistake, we're going to do it. And this is where we get the great scene where Wes is saying, like, I was a great player too, and it got me nothing but a runner-up prize. Most valuable loser.
Yeah, Jerry. But both Jerrys are kind of at a opposing viewpoints, and I think it's going to be fun to see for however long Wes sticks around to see them butting heads to do what each person thinks is best for the team.
Yeah. Bus has this great, I wasn't sure. I had no idea whether Jerry Buss was, like, a respected figure, whether he was somebody who was going to be sort of portrayed in the show as somebody who's positive or negative. I love it here. He's such a class act when he's just like, well, I look forward to working with you, Jerry. And Buss says, also, you might want to switch to vodka. I used to drink a lot of bourbon in it. You know, you can smell the vodka less on your breath. Yeah,
I can see he's getting shades of gray of Buss throughout the season, which I think is going to be an interesting way for John C. Reilly to play it. I have faith he can. So yeah, I think that's probably what we're going to get more, kind of a shades of gray type of character, but I think he'll be more anti-hero than anything else.
Right. Yeah. Going against the establishment of what the NBA currently is. Yeah. I can definitely see that. So this is where we get Magic. He's going to the party that Jerry has invited him to. This is where we get the sorry, sir, it's whites only. He thinks he's going to, you know, if we were in Lansing, deal with you differently. But he gets a white jacket. And he goes in. This is where he meets Don Sterling. And then Magic meets Norm. They play some pickup basketball. What do you think of this scene?
I love the scene. I mean, it shows, it gives us at least a taste of some basketball in this episode.
Yeah, true.
So I thought it was really fun. You know, I don't know if I saw Norm coming away with that as winning, but he outright beats Magic, like, just really badly, according to this episode. So I thought it was very interesting. And you know, like you said earlier, it showcases the range that Magic will go through in this episode, where he's from his highest of highs, where he has the upper hand on Jack, where it's to now he's just doubting whether he should do this at all.
Yeah.
By the end of this interaction with Norm.
Yeah, and I think what's really fun here is that not only does it do great character work for Magic to see that he, you know, he's like stated as, like, you know, he's going to be the next big thing. And also, like, he has not played professional basketball before. He has played college basketball, right? So he will have to step up his game. And it is a thing that, like, you do have to learn, you know, rookies perhaps in some of these sports, certainly basketball being one where rookies can come in and really thrive in the NBA, but it's not easy. And it's pretty rare for a rookie to be able to come in and suddenly be, like, the best in the game, right? So it's going to take some there will be a learning curve for him. So I like that. And I also love that we set up Norm as another absolute dickhead who will eventually get have a probably a rather enjoyable fall from grace as we probably watch him.
Yeah, but I liked Norm overall. I think he's obviously a little hurt that Magic's going to come in and steal his shine, but I liked him as a character overall. I don't know how much more we'll get of him, seeing as how, you know, Magic is going to go to the Lakers and presumably steal his spot.
Yeah, and again, we could chat about the, like, are we spoiling real life? I have no, I can't spoil it because I don't really know what happens to Norm Nixon when Magic comes and presumably takes the starting game.
I don't want to spoil myself, so I'm not going to, like, go too far in the future, but yeah.
Yeah,
I like the character. I hope he sticks around a little bit.
So I wonder, I think there's two things that can happen with Norm. Is one is that he, gets ousted from his spot, whatever. But the other one is that he could sort of have that humbling experience because he's clearly trying to humble Magic here, and then recognize that, like, oh, it's kind of a dick, you know,
being a bit of a dick. Yeah, he could be a bench warmer for a while, like, cutting eyes at Magic every time he comes off the court.
Yeah. So whether he becomes sort of like, you know, actually recognizes Magic as like his peer, or whether he'll be like jealous of him, I think interesting to see. But I really like the setup here for Nora, like wearing the fox jacket, the foxskin jacket, having to take it off. Yeah. So as Nixon tells him, maybe you should go back to college. And we get this flashbacks of Magic Johnson playing basketball as a kid, you know, training with his father, falling asleep with a basketball in his hand while like his father's driving the garbage truck. I thought a good sequence here to sort of show where Magic comes from. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, good stuff is showing him as a kid, like narrating the play-by-play, and then showing him a little later at like one of the last scenes of this episode where he does that same thing on the court at the Forum. So yeah, really good scene, really great work there.
And not, it doesn't feel like they do a really good job of sort of like, they don't bookend it, this in the middle of the episode, and then we get the moment at the end of the episode, but sort of like slotting it in where it sort of makes sense. He's like thinking back, like, did I do all this stuff? You know, this is what I loved as a kid. Did I totally mess up? You know, I think it's really strong. We get another really great scene. I think John C. Reilly and Quincy Isaiah are probably the standouts of this episode, but I am very excited about these two characters in particular. They interact for the first time here. Claire is sitting in one of the boardrooms, and Jeannie comes in, and Claire says, "How was your first week? I figured out how to use the Xerox." That's the hardest part. And Claire immediately goes into this very graphic. So it's just like, "Oh, yeah, there's this kid at school. He, Dondo, he is the first dick I ever saw."
Freaking Dondos, man. I hate that Dondos. Guy.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't really remember his like penis wasn't memorable, but like Dondos is memorable. And like sort of gives this thing where like, yeah, these like men, these rich men spin a wheel and decide who they're going to be in the morning. And that's how Claire has to figure out who she's going to be that day. She has to figure out how to act based on how the men, the powerful men in her life, are going to behave. And Jeannie says, "Are you trying to figure out if my dad's like that?" Says, "Well, is he?" And we do not get an answer in this.
Well, I think, you know, what happens a little later down the line is that we'll figure out that maybe, you know, Jeannie convinces Claire that, you know, my dad's not really like that. And she already kind of saw that when earlier in the episode, when Jerry knows who she is and knows what she's done, like he tells her, like, "You got one of the biggest rock acts in the Forum," or something, whatever he said.
Right.
So he already has acknowledged her work and acknowledged her as a person and not just as a woman to get him things and look and ogle her. I think I hope that we see like a Claire and Jeannie kind of work behind the scenes to really control things, really help Jerry to make the Lakers better. I think that's what we'll see. We'll see them as kind of a powerful force, even if they're kind of in the background.
And again, not to spoil real life, but Jeannie Buss is an executive in Los Angeles. Yes. Yep. She has owned the Lakers. Like she is she's very like powerful. And I do think like this story of having to work through a time period which is not, and in an industry that is not favorable to women all the time. You know, this is we're living in the age where it is still news when a woman gets hired as a coach. You know, in Major League Baseball, it's been a big story. A bunch of these women being hired as hitting coaches or the first coach in the minor leagues. You know, it's still news. This is not an industry that is easy for women to be working in. And so I am excited, especially I am a huge Gabby Hoffman fan. I've been a fan in everything she has been in. And so I am very excited to see her play this role in particular and the story that they can tell here. So yeah
I'm not too familiar with her, but I like what I saw so far.
So we do, and I think what they're trying to do here is Jerry Buss has this image, like I think what the show is like, he could be one of these people. He could very easily be somebody who is like uses his power for bad stuff, and he is like, you know, he's like hanging out the Playboy mansion, like he's very like, you know, but at the same time he does have like he's from what we've seen so far a pretty good dude, but we do jump to him like begging his ex-wife for a loan.
I think we're able to see like the work and the play side of Jerry.
Yes, that's right.
The difference is he doesn't mix the two.
Yes,
you know, he knows when work is work and when play is play. So I think that's going to be how Jerry comes off in the series.
Yeah. So he's banging her and he's like, when have I ever steered you wrong? And he goes, well, I guess you did marry me.
But she was a figure skater. What the heck can you blame me?
Yeah. And then he uses this again. He's very savvy here. He goes, you know, Jeannie's working for the Lakers. And she goes, oh, come on. No, don't do this. And it's like, she's got her eyes set on you. He's like, is that a bad thing? Like, I'm her dad. Like, you know, that's good. And so she does agree to loan him the money. Says he won't regret it. I think they both kind of laugh. Maybe yeah. Jerry after he gets off the phone. This is where he kisses Frank. He says, thank God for ex-wives.
The show doesn't really intimate this, but like I wonder if Jerry like had this plan the whole time. Like when he knew he needed money, he's like, I don't know where to get some money from my ex-wife. I'll kind of connect it to our daughter.
Yeah.
Giving her a job. So, you know.
She does that. She's like, this isn't the first, like, you didn't call me immediately. She's like, I called everybody else before I called
you. Literally any other person. And they don't really explain to us where else he got the money from because his ex-wife's going to give him $2 million, but he needed like
$15 million. He said he says on the phone too. He says, I don't have anything left to sell. So it sounds like he sold a bunch of stuff. He potentially some other people loaned him some money as well. And then this is his like the last $2 million that he needs comes from his wife. So, yeah. So this is they're celebrating, but this is when Jeannie comes in and says, Cook is going to ask you for the money all in cash. And this is where I think again you can tell that Jerry really respects Claire. Says, why you work for him? Like, what are you doing? She's like, I think I'd rather work for you. And so
he's won Claire over apparently.
Yes, yeah. So I think you're right. We don't see the finale to the scene earlier with Jeannie and Claire when she's like, is your dad like that? And we don't get the answer here, but I think this scene implies that she does give like a, I don't think he's like that at the very least. Yeah. So we get Magic. He's at the hotel, but now he is a much different state than he was when he was eating the room service. Curtains are drawn. He's watching TV. His dad comes and opens and goes, what's going on with you? What are you doing? He's worried. What if he fails? And this is, I think, again, really great. I think often sometimes, too, there's like these where like sport dads can be bad dads. And this is not this take. Because he says, you know, I don't care if you fail. If you come back to Lansing, you have people who love you. And kind of a harsh line for mention. I don't want to be Lansing's tallest garbage man.
Yeah, it's like, come on, man. Why do you got to do that to your dad?
Come on, like, dad. Come on. Yeah.
But he looks at him like, yeah, well, I mean, sorry, no offense. But yeah, it's like you said, it's, you know, in these type of projects, it's either a dad that wants to push their child the furthest they can push them and wants them to succeed the best, or this is dad, I'm going to be happy with you wherever you do because you're a great guy and I love you no matter what you do.
Yeah. And this is another little great speech here. He's just like, you know, before you even born, you're in your mom's belly. We just sat and wondered, like, who are you going to be? And he said, you could be Dr. Johnson. You could be a lawyer. We never imagined you would play pro basketball, but you don't have to play. Like, no matter what, we'll love you. And that bottom line will never change. It's really great. It's really
cute. Cue the studio audience.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. This is where we get Jerry's heading to Jack's house to complete the deal. This is where we get the title of the episode. There's some swans in the pond. He says, you know what I love about swans? Most graceful bird on the planet. Underneath, their feet are paddling like crazy.
I love the imagery that they used after this, great. Like on the showing the ducks like, you know, paddling underwater. Very good stuff.
I love this cinematography. The cinematography of this episode I thought was really great. Certainly the way it's like filmed at times feels exactly like it's a movie from the 1980s. Like
I listened to the quote unquote official Winning Time podcast and they were talking about how they shot it.
Yeah.
And they shot it with something called an ikigami, which is actually equipment like from the 70s. So they shot part of it that way. They shot it so that it would look like a 16mm a film.
Hey, HBO loves it. Euphoria shot on film. That makes sense that they would do that for this show as well. It totally felt like the way you see this the image. It feels like it's exactly from the 1980s. It's really great.
Yeah, it was really great. Looked like they had great filters on, even when it was like was not shot that way to kind of give you that old feel. So
there's also this choice they made sometimes too, where like you'd be in a scene and perhaps like there's a scene later when Magic is like looking at pictures in the hallway at the forum, and then when they show like a picture of it, it looks like it's almost like filmed as a documentary. Much
I think
than
that's
like,
what they shot with the ikigami camera.
Got it. There's another thing that they did in this episode, which I saw some critiques of it, is when someone would be speaking, but the image of them would not be them speaking. What do you think of that?
Thought that was interesting. I caught that a few times. The first time I thought it was like some like editing mistake, but I was like, no, I think that's something they're trying to actually go for. I'm just not sure what the purpose of it is.
They did it a lot with Jerry, specifically. There's some stuff early on. And then the one that I remembered the most is when he gets the 2 million, Frank is like, "She did it." And he starts singing, but then also at the same time, that's overlaid with him like being like, "She did it. She's in." And he like kisses Frank with like also him singing in the background. And then, the scene between Claire and Jeannie, when she's retelling the story, there's moments where she's just like smoking the cigarette, like it's on her, but she's telling the story at the same time. I don't know. I could get why people would think it's annoying. It feels like it almost is the same thing as like when the sound isn't lined up with the
you want to like dubbing's off or something.
Yeah. But to me, I kind of like it almost like keeps me engaged in the show in a way. I'm like, oh, it's like interesting little thing that they did there. So
I wouldn't say it did anything like positive for me, but it didn't ruin it for me. Yeah. I was just wondering like why. I don't know why you would really do that. I don't know what purpose it serves.
Yeah. So we get the meeting here between Jack and Jerry. Jerry lays out the sale. He has all the properties. Here's the check. You already have the deposit. And Jack here says, I could ask for it all in cash. And this is where I do love this. Like, again, I think that the scene is only in here for us to be like, wow, Jerry is smart and cool. And like, no, he's a business guy, because he turns and he goes, "Watch me paddle, mother." Like, whatever. Yeah.
But were you surprised that it was this easy?
Yes.
I mean, he just kind of says like a few sentences and then Jack's like, oh, yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
I was going to do it the whole time anyway. I just, you know.
Yeah, so like if this is the end of Jack Cook, like I'm certainly not mad at that. He's terrible, so like I'm kind of fine. Like I don't need more of that guy. I don't know. On one hand, it's very satisfying to see him like played so easily, right? That is just like immediately the bluff gets called and he's wrong. And in other ways, I feel like the scene is a bit like it feels very, again, writery to me. Like I can see the exact intent that they want me to have in the scene, which is they want Jerry to look like he's amazing. Mm-hmm. And so they set up this like little plot in this episode where it's like, well, what if he actually like reneges on the deal, but he actually has no standing in the deal. So it never feels like real. Like when it happens, you're like, oh, okay.
I think I would have preferred him to do it with a little more like finesse and like pizzazz than just saying like, just give him the brass tacks. Like, hey, you know, you could not do this, but you're still going to owe a lot of money to your wife.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. Cause like, I think there's a good line here where Jerry is like, oh, I had all this extra time to maybe like pull out all the money. Like, you think I did that? I absolutely didn't do that at all. So it's kind of like, it's kind of funny. Cause it's like showing he's like, not this, like he's a little bit like more like smarmy. He's a little bit more like, you know, he's kind of like used car salesman-y more than he is like fanatical genius or whatever. And so I kind of like that. At the same time, I feel like I wish there was like something he could have pulled other than to just say like, well, you're never going to do that. Like you owe your wife a bunch of money. You could take my $18 million, but where does that get you? Like nowhere. So I wish there was like
this team going down the drain.
Yeah.
I just, you know, we get the line from him earlier where he's like, I was a physical chemist, you know, and he was like, I was looking him up a little bit. He's like 24 when he got those degrees, when he started working. Oh, really? He was very young. But I don't know if I felt more snake oil salesman than like genius.
Yeah. Same.
In this portrayal, in this episode, at least.
I kind of thought that like there should be maybe like the thing we don't see that like that Jerry's able to like pull out other than just being like, no, I'm going to call your bluff, you know, but it doesn't ruin the episode for me. I think it's totally fine. But yeah, it's just like, this is the part of the episode where I you know, when I rewatched it, I was like, yeah, this doesn't do a ton for me.
You know?
But yeah. So Cook agrees to the deal. But bad news for Jerry. Magic says, yeah, I'm going to go back to college, thinks he needs another year. And, Jerry, again, like this to me was clever. This is the clever bit. This is like what I want from the scene before. And so maybe I'm like wanting too much, because we do get this like really clever thing, I think, where he says, well, okay, let me walk. I'll walk you out. And so then he's walking and he goes, oh, we're lost. I think we're lost. Let me get somebody. We'll figure out how to get out. And so Magic then is conveniently right near the locker room where he will find the Lakers jersey with his name and number on it, and be able to like head out onto the court and play basketball for a bit. And this is like, you could tell because he runs, you know, Claire and Jeannie are watching, and Jerry runs up with them and they watch Magic. And to me, this is really clever of like, feels a little bit like, you know, like, oh, we're lost. And he's like, ends up near the locker room. Like, I think Magic clues in, but I don't really care if Magic clues in because I think the moment is so fun.
Yeah, it was a setup of obviously, you know, and he just kind of like lets Magic live in it for a yeah. minute, like try on the suit. See how it fits you, like see, like run around in it, like get into the feel of it. And I think that he knows that once he gets a taste of that, he's not going to want to go back.
Yeah, it's great. I love this. And this is like kind of like, yeah, that like clever little thing that Jerry can do. That's like, I think really works well in the scene. And it's fun. Again, I love, you mentioned earlier, we get the flashback of Magic as a kid commentating, and we get the same thing in this scene where Magic is commentating himself playing in the Forum. It's really, really good. So the Los Angeles Lakers draft Irvin Magic Johnson. And he says that the Lakers are already a great team, but with him, they're going to be very exciting. Jerry West looks very much unimpressed at the draft.
He's very agitated.
Yeah. I love that like look on his face. Just like trying to smile kind of, but not being able to smile.
So a smile grimace, like a smimace.
Yeah. And he heads back to his office where he chucks his MVP trophy.
I knew that was coming. Like, I was me like, too. Right, he's going to throw the trophy through the window, obviously.
It's good. I think like it's perfect. It's framed in a way that you're like, he's obviously about to chuck something through the window, right? Like we have not followed him. The cameras have followed him into the office. It's like very much clearly centered on like the hallway. And even though I knew it was coming, I was like, that's great. I love it. Yeah. And Magic listens in on the radio as they talk about his nearly record-breaking contract. He did not beat Larry Bird's record-breaking contract. Jerry buys himself a drink and then heads onto the court. And I love the end of this episode as well. I think great insight into Jerry here. He's just walks to the middle of the court. He says, I own this. I effing own this.
And he's just, yeah, I mean, like, throughout this whole episode, we get, like, Jerry is, like, a really cool customer. Like, he's not really over-exuberant. But, like, at the end of this episode, he's just like, yeah, I did it. Like I own this. Is mine. Like he's kind of giddy as a kid. He's obviously a little drunk, and he's like in the center of court, like just letting it all out at this point, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah, and that's the end of the episode. Jerry yelling, "I effing own this!" I think four times in total. He says the words, "I effing own this," and that's the premiere. I thought really, really strong. I thought again, these episodes can often feel like a lot of setup. It is a lot of setup. It's about Jerry being able to buy the Los Angeles Lakers and whether Magic Johnson will be drafted, choose to play. Two things that we know happen.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. So, like, do you think they spent a little too much time on the quote the decision that we already know is going to be made, or the transaction we're already going to know? I mean, we have a 10 episode season here and they're billing this as a limited series. How fast do you want this pace to go? What do you think we're going to be covering by time the season ends?
I think we get to 1991, I think, right? I think we get to where we start the show, right? That very much feels like as I watch this episode, like even though I watched it twice, I kind of like forget that first scene happens with him in the doctor's office. But I do feel like it's in there because that's where we will wind up.
Or do you think this might be like kind of a for those that watch like Better Call Saul, like are we going to get a few vignettes of 1991 sprinkled throughout the season?
Yeah, maybe they like cut back and forth. I'm not sure. It really felt like because we stuck here pretty much the whole time. Like, you think like once per episode or something, or like we get
maybe once every couple episodes. Like maybe we'll see his press conference announcing he's retiring,
right?
Because he has HIV. I don't know if we're going to get through the end of this first season by the end of our first season, or if we're going to speed through some of the years at any point.
Yeah, I don't know. Certainly we'll see. I do think we're going to speed through 10 years. Like, it, you know, because they've called it a limited series. I do expect that, like, this covers the whole dynasty versus, like, this is just about his first year in the league. So that might be a little jarring to, like, come back next week and we're, like, you know, a year, like, you know, is it the end of the first season or something, you know?
Yeah.
Could be interesting. But, you know, I think, we have two decisions here. The two central plot lines are things that we know will happen, but I was not watching the show to, you know, and I thought that the show did a really good job of not making it feel like everything was weighing on these two decisions that these people had, whether Jerry could buy the Lakers, whether Magic would decide to play and get drafted by the Los Angeles Lakers. It does such a good job of telling you who these characters are, particularly with Magic, like what he's struggling with, that he has the confidence of somebody who might be the best player of all time. And also this like creeping doubt in his head based on like, you know, where he's come from, what he's up against, whether he could actually like live up to the potential. I think all that stuff was like so strong enough that it, you know, there easily could have been a version of this, of the show where I'm like, yeah, this is kind of boring. Like I knew everything was going to happen. Right. But the character development is so strong. And the performances are so strong, I think, particularly by those two. I thought it was good. And there's intrigue for me about what we're going to get to see from like Claire, Jeannie, that side of things. So, and Kareem and Norm. So, yeah,
I think I'm probably most excited to see more of Kareem out of all the like secondary characters that we saw.
Same.
Cause he was just so interesting in the limited time we got with him this episode.
They only mention it very briefly once in this episode. I think Jack calls him by his previous name. He's not always known by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, right?
I think it's Lew Alcindor, maybe?
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, he's a very interesting, you know, person. So,
well, I mean, even now, like present day,
true.
Kareem is a very interesting person. You'll see a lot of his like essays and a lot of his things talking about a lot of things that are going on in our culture today. So if no one's checked that out, good, look up some of the stuff he's written about and some of the stuff he's been saying. So even to this day, he's a very interesting guy.
Yeah. If you want to chat about Winning Time with Jason, myself, and lots of other folks, a great place you could do that is by becoming a patron of Post Show Recaps, patreon.com/postshowrecaps. At any level, you get access to the Discord. At the $5 level, you could get access to our television channel where you could chat about that. At the $10 level, you could get access to our Winning Time specific thread where folks were chatting today about the episode. You also get bonus content and at higher level, exclusive podcasts, YA, currently going through the Harry Potter series, extra Josh Wigler and Kevin Monte talking through the X-Men cartoon series, and lots more early access podcasts. And at higher levels, you get access to merch. It is the beginning of the month ish. We are a week out from March 1st. So a great time to become a patron. Patreon will charge you at the beginning, no matter when you sign up in the month, it will charge you for that month. And then on the first of the month for the next month. So the earlier in the month you get in, the better. So now is a great time. This podcast dropped in a couple of feeds, the HBO feed. So if you're listening to this in the main feed and want coverage, want to make sure you don't miss any of the HBO shows we're doing, you can catch all of those over at postshowrecaps.com/HBO pod. It also dropped in the Euphoria pod. So if you're listening to us because you were a fan of Euphoria, make sure you don't miss the rest of our coverage by either joining our HBO feed or checking it out in the main feed. Jason, where can people find you? And what are you up to?
I'm on Twitter at JAYR1085. Right now, I am co-hosting a weekly recap of the Married at First Sight show with Asia Welch right now. We're in the middle of the season. It's a fun time. You don't actually have to watch the show to follow along. We'll walk you through it. It's a lot of fun. Check us out over on Rob Has a Podcast, over on the reality TV wrap ups. That's where we'll be. So that's where you'll find me every week and here now.
Yes, we will be back each week. We might have some guests sprinkled along the way. I believe we have a special guest joining us next week. We will keep that secret for now, but look out for, we're more than a two-person crew. We have to fill up the lineup, Jason.
We need a starting three or starting five or however many we're going to have.
We won the coin toss against, I was going to name another podcast on the feed. I can't think of one at the moment. Isn't that bad?
that's bad. I mean, you're on like all the other shows, so you can.
Yeah, that's true. I'm trying to think of a show that I'm not on. The Gilded Age. We won the coin toss against the Gilded Age. So we get first pick for our guest next week.
There we go.
Okay. Great. I did it. I made a joke. Topical joke.
I made a funny.
I'm covering lots of stuff here on Post Show Recaps. Currently, Raised by Wolves, a weekly coverage with Josh Wigler and Taryn Armstrong. Weekly movie coverage with Ariel. That's been a lot of fun. We'll be back this week with coverage of Drive My Car, the Oscar-nominated Picture, Japanese film that dropped in HBO Max. Our Flag Means Death, a new Taika Waititi HBO show. I love HBO shows. That's my jam. So we're covering that pirate show. Over on Rob as a Podcast this week are the sports show, which Jason has guested on in the past. We'll be making its triumphant return. We are doing a reformatting of the show. So look out for that. It is currently yet unnamed as well, because I'm indecisive. So, but the sports show will be back this week with talking about March Madness, a preview of March Madness. So check that out. I think that's all. Until next week, we'll see you next week. Bye.